David, how's it going?
It's good. I'm excited. We're going to give people our greenest episode yet.
I think they've been clamoring for this.
Well, we've had bluest. You know, we've had some, there was some, a dash of red in a few episodes, but this is green.
Because you're talking about the probably the Hollywood's leading environmentalist.
This episode was recorded at the Impact Summit. And not only was Ed Begley Jr. our guest, the great Ed Begley Jr., there was also sort of a small crowd of some of the great environmentalists in Hollywood. That there was Wendy Malick, who we both love and know. Yeah. There was Francis Fisher.
Yeah.
And I believe, yes, Lance Bass of NSYNC.
Yep.
Was there. So that was, it was like our own little environmental boy band girl group.
Happy to do this one because I happen to believe that we need the earth.
It's one of our top venues.
That's right.
If there's no earth, there can be no restaurants.
Exactly right.
Ridiculous.
We have nothing.
You got nothing. But we got Ed Begley Jr.
Yes.
Let's spill the beans, chew the fat, food for thought, jokes on tap. Talking with our mouths full, having fun. A piece of cake and humble pie, serving up a slice of life. Leave the dressing on the side, it's naked lunch. Clothing optional.
Welcome, welcome. Are you going to sit all the way over there?
Yes. We spent enough time together.
All right. Hi, David.
Hi, Phil. They had us back.
I haven't
back.
Seen you since lunch.
Yeah, exactly. This is the first Naked Lunch podcast we've done without any lunch. We had lunch here.
But we're bringing the naked. Here
yes.
we go.
Exactly. Bad news. Good news, bad news.
Bad news, yeah. Bad news for the front row.
Exactly. And last year we were here with Wolfgang Puck. We're honored to be back. And to have, when we were asked about coming back, they tried to get us to take another chef. But we said, no, we want the OG gangsta of environmentalism.
That's right. Probably the face of Hollywood environmentalism.
The whole body is.
Yes.
He bicycles with his legs.
The body's good, too.
Exactly.
Should we bring him out?
Yes. The one and only Ed Begley Jr.
Yay!
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for remembering.
Ed is here.
Let me see if I can not fall down.
Ed is here.
I'll come around this way. Bless you all. You must be Phil Rosenthal. Hey.
Hi, buddy. Look, it's Ed, everyone. Ed, you know, very environmental. He did not drive here. He rode a goose.
Exactly. The gray goose.
Please. The gray goose. Ah.
Exactly.
Ed, how you doing?
I'm very good. How are you guys?
You look great.
I feel full of rich emollients. I feel very, very good. Very.
I've never heard that centered. In a sentence.
Well, I moisturized just before I came on.
It's important, right?
Very important.
You look youthful.
You do, too. You look quite youthful. Gorgeous.
I got
and that
this
Monica,
going.
That wife of yours.
How about her?
You did pretty good.
I did. You did, too.
Rochelle is here. Where's
Rochelle?
Rochelle Carson.
Oh.
Yay, Rochelle.
She's right up front. We're blinded by the light. Yeah. Rochelle, tell my favorite Rochelle story, please.
The screen. Oh, you're talking about at the screening of Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Yes.
When she asked Michelle, what did you ask her exactly? Remind me of the question.
Yeah.
Who did your martial arts for you?
Yeah,
Michelle?
She hadn't seen Crouching Tiger, I guess.
Yes. I said, do you know who this is? Yeah.
She was very sweet about it. She didn't. She was no.
That was fun. That was fun.
What a good movie. I love that movie, by the way.
It's a great movie.
It's about something important.
How'd it do?
Yeah. I'm waiting to hear.
So we know each other for many years already.
Many years.
Did you know Ed?
Well, the story is we found out this show is often, it's like, how do I know you could be the subtitle of the show. Because at lunch, before this lunch, Phil just found out when he met you, thanks to Rochelle. I met you when Debbie, who introduced us, brought me into the organization. At the first meeting, she tried to impress me and mentioned that you were involved, and then I knew it was legit. And that's so that's like, I think we both all...
It usually has the opposite effect, so I'm very pleased with this.
No, no.
But Rochelle reminded me that we met at Norman Lear's 85th birthday party, which is already a very long time ago.
Yes. Oh, my God. I can't believe
it. Because he's not like 100. He's 100.
I know.
Right?
He's 101 maybe now.
Close. Don't rush him. Don't rush him.
Okay, whatever you say.
But right after that, you asked if you could come, or Rochelle asked if you guys could come over, because I had, you heard, I had one of the first no-flush urinals installed in a private home.
Exactly.
And you wanted to feature it on your show.
Are you toilet dropping now?
Yes.
That's terrible. And you were otherwise a pioneer with not just solar on your roof like me, these overhanging, you know, cantilevered panel systems. You had them embedded onto your very roof. Your roof was a solar panel. You had the solar shingles, which nobody had, Phil Rosenthal and Monica.
Well, thanks. Can I tell you something? They crapped out after 3 years.
Oh, that's not good.
No. So I'd like, I asked you here today for a refund.
You'll get a full refund. No. Let me get my Amex out.
But let me ask you.
I've got a very high limit.
While we're, of course, it was anytime you go into a new technology, you're taking a risk that that might happen. So let me ask you as an expert, I'm assuming these things have gotten way better and more efficient.
What I was hoping for, and clearly I'm learning now, did not happen. Those amorphous solar panels, which are different than polycrystalline panels, the kind that I have on my roof, they're...
Is that what I had?
Yeah, you had... And all the shingles have what are called amorphous panels, like a little pocket calculator, those things.
Yes.
The polycrystalline are the kind you see most of in the solar farms. And so those, as it turns out, don't have the life we had hoped for. The polycrystalline lasts a long time. I was rooting for you, and I guess it didn't work out.
It's okay. But the other thing I didn't know was, if unless you wash them all the time, they're covered. They get covered in soot and dirt and smog and whatever else, and they're not going to work.
I'm up there on the roof a lot with Rochelle cheering me on, going, get near the edge. Did you pay your policy? Closer. No, go the other way.
A little further. A little further.
A little further. I'm taking a picture. Back up a bit.
She has a good insurance policy.
Yeah, my polycrystalline panels from the 80s, I don't have those anymore because I built a new home. But those from 1989 are still working in somebody else's house. I've talked to them occasionally. Yeah. They've lost some of their wattage, but they haven't gone crap on you.
Okay, so what is the future of that?
The future of polycrystalline is very good because the old ones I would make, even the polycrystalline, they would make them more by hand with some machines involved. Now they're all robotic, so all of the different connections are much better. Oh. I had about 4 or 5 panels out of about 100 that got very poor wattage for after a while because of the connections. They were done by a person.
Right.
Now that they're done by robotics, that doesn't happen. You could see on the back of them, there'd be little burn marks. Burn marks are a result of electrical resistance. And that means that you're not getting the wattage you shoot out of the panels. But they replaced them, the 5 that were defective.
Okay.
They stood by, there's a warranty. If you lose more than, I think it's 10% of your wattage in a decade, new panels, they send them to you. Okay. If you lose 15% in 20 years, they send them to you. And so after now, that, you're on your own.
So now is the time to redo my roof. Is that right?
Yes. Now,
now it's good.
Quite reliable.
And is there a brand you like?
And I don't.
Is there someone we can plug?
Not in the shingle department. I got to look into that. I mean, I, of course, do have shingles, as you know, but not that kind.
There's a shot for that now.
Yeah, exactly. Penicillin. Yeah. Yeah. Can we talk, Ed, a little bit about the roots of
I'm still on the shingles.
Okay, go back to shingles.
No, go ahead.
The roots of your environmentalism, because... I remember when Jeff Goldblum, when you got your Lifetime Achievement Award at the Emma Awards, and I was working with your friend Jeff, who had many great things to say about you. He said there were things like, I love this guy so much, we've gone to all of each other's weddings. He said, I don't know if he was cheap first or an environmentalist first.
All true, by the way.
All true. So, well, I wanted to ask, now I know your father, because you are the original Nepo baby in Hollywood.
That's correct.
Your father, you said something along the lines of he was cheap around the house with,
he did not use the word environmentalist, but he was one. We turned off the lights, turned off the water, saved strings, saved tinfoil, you know, watched every gallon of gas, everything. He was a son of Irish immigrants. He lived through the Great Depression. So he had that ethic and that way of thinking. So he gave that to me. The other great gift he said, Eddie, don't just talk about stuff, because I was complaining about the smog to him in 1970 before he passed. He said, I know I'm against smog too. That's what you're against. But what are you for? what are you doing to make a difference? You know, try to build an electric car.
Yes. Yeah,
let's have a hand for that.
Ed, turn a little this way, because these people, they can't see you.
I'm very sorry.
Turn a little this way.
I didn't even know there were people over there. I'm very sorry. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I want
typical Hollywood people shunning.
Listen, they paid a lot of money to see Ed Begley.
And Ed, you're...
Thank you and welcome.
Can
we go from the top again for them?
Yes. For your... For to prepare for this, I actually spent all morning watching season one of Saint Elsewhere, and it struck me that your life was changed. And by the way, it holds up so well, and it's on Hulu streaming for free. So watch
it. Very kind. It is a good show. I've seen a couple of them lately.
Oh, great.
I can't watch a hospital show.
Even that show has ties to your environmentalism, and Emma, I believe, because am I right in that Blythe Danner told me a story when she was honored a few years ago that early in this organization, wasn't Blythe sort of part of the sort of initial environmental sort of...
She definitely was. She was big on recycling in Santa Monica, where she and Bruce Paltrow lived. And their kids, Jake and Gwyneth, were big into it. And she was a dedicated environmentalist for years. So you got to give her credit. She was trying to influence Bruce on every show that he did. And so she was quite successful. The other thing, I talked about the positive influence, which was my dad, that started me in 1970. The other one was being in Boy Scouts. I was a Boy Scout, and I saw nature up close and personal. But the negative was as compelling as any of it. I lived in smoggy L.A.
Yeah.
So you couldn't run from here to that door where we came in without wheezing like this, like an asthmatic. And I'm not an asthmatic, nor was I ever back then. I just, but I had trouble breathing. And now... We got to remember our successes sometimes, too. We have four times the cars in LA from 1970, millions more people, but only a fraction of the smog. We all did that together.
Yeah,
give yourselves a hand. With catalytic converters on cars, with cleaner power plants, with all the stuff that we did at your house and my house, and Bruce Paltrow and Blythe Danner did, it all made a difference. Now, having said that, there's still people near these fulfillment centers and the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles are breathing very dirty air. We got to clean that part up for them, because locally for them it's the air big hand for that.
But all over the world.
All over the world.
Because it's all interconnected.
It
the
sure
sky
is.
Doesn't stop at the border.
It sure doesn't.
So we need to, it needs to be a worldwide effort. Do you worry sometimes that the other countries that are not rowing along with us are canceling out what we do?
I worry about that, but I don't get hung up on that. I'm still going to do it. You know, back then when I started doing it, people would say, what difference does it make you? One guy driving your little electric car in 1970, you're recycling, who cares? Nobody else is. Why are you bothering? Well, bit by bit, you make a difference.
That's right.
And you can, if we lead by example,
right,
and we export some of these good technology that we prove makes sense in dollars and cents, really makes financial sense to the people in India and in China, we can sell them on that and good American technology that does that, we'll win them over to have more solar and wind and all of it. But we got to do what we can do first.
And just to show you,
run for office?
Yes.
Don't you think?
Oh God, no!
Wouldn't he be great?
No more actors in the White House, please.
Yeah, but you're smart. You can. Did you ever consider it?
Not really.
I would vote for you.
You would okay. I'm going to run then. With Phil Rosenthal behind me, I can do it.
Listen, what I learned in show business, I'm sure you've learned this too. You're not going to get the whole audience, but you may as well keep yours.
Exactly. Make a show that you're going to love.
That's
Everybody
right.
loves Raymond. You love the show yourself. I love the show.
Thanks.
You make a show that people love, that you love yourself, and the whole country and the whole world's going to love it.
The best advice I ever got was do the show you want to do, because in the end, they're going to cancel you anyway.
Exactly.
And by the way, yeah, that's so true. And we had Pam Adlon on recently, and you've repeated that to so many other showrunners that's become sort of like shared wisdom.
But a lot of people, when they make a show or do anything in life, they think if I just take all their notes, if I just do what they want me to do, then I'll get on and then I can do it.
Yeah, how's that
polling?
Never
works.
Never.
Never, ever. Because you've sullied your original idea.
Right.
To the point where it stinks, and then they don't put it on.
Exactly.
And they're not going to say, oh, I guess it was my note that made it bad.
Exactly.
Right?
Make a show you want to see. Make a movie you want to see yourself.
But you seem to get along with everyone. Even with your big lefty ideas, you work more than anyone I know. So how do you work that like I know it wasn't always easy to be Mr. Green. In fact, did your agents tell you, hey, knock it off with that stuff? Because people
in the 90s, I had a bad decade in the 90s where I didn't work much. Not I was never on a blacklist. I'm sure I was not on a
green list. Yes.
Right. But I gave people the creeps. They thought I was going to come up to them and go, how dare you take the limo to this event? You know, when I had ridden my bike or something, but I'm not, as
you were never judgmental.
You know me, I was never judgmental. No. This is what I do. If you want to do it yourself, I'll show you what I did.
And that's how it started. There wasn't like a moment on a film set where you said, I can't stand the waste anymore. You must all change.
No, never did that. But from the other side, people literally thought I was going to like shut down the production. There was a movie called Pagemaster with Macaulay Culkin. I played the dad. We had the scene coming up where I'm supposed to drive back down a driveway in our family station wagon. And I show up that day to do the scene, and I could see people with headsets looking at me and going, yeah, he's here now. Uh-huh. No, nobody's talked to him yet. Oh, my God, I'm getting fired. And finally somebody comes up, Ed, sit down. We need to talk for a second. I said, am I being let go? He said, no, no, not at all. But we don't want any trouble, Ed. I said, I don't want any trouble either. What's the problem? He said, we've got a scene tonight. The scene, yeah, I saw the call sheet. I know the script. You back down the driveway in the thing. We can just roll it down. I swear to God, Ed, we looked everywhere in America. There is no such thing as an electric station wagon.
Oh,
it doesn't
exist. That's fantastic.
And it's true. There was no electric station wagon then or now, unless somebody converted one.
Right.
They couldn't find an electric station wagon. They thought I was going to storm off the set. Like, how dare you have me back down gravity in a regular gasoline car?
But you've never been militant. You've always been nice about it. Where did they get this idea that you were going to be this?
I don't know. It happened another time, too. The same thing. The headsets of people. Yeah, he's here now. What is it already? I finally said. I learned. They said, we'll have the recycling bins out by noon. I'm sorry. Somebody forgot them. They thought I was going to storm off because they didn't have recycling bins. I want them to have the bins. Don't get me wrong. And I'd love it if they had an electric car for me in a show. But I'm not gonna get fired over it.
Do you think it was the late night shows that maybe made jokes and you became like that became your identity? The media created a monster?
I think that might be it. The Simpsons did a wonderful episode
on
me. And it was very, very funny. I drive a little go-kart, this car that's powered by my own sense of self-satisfaction. Very good stuff.
It's funny because it's true.
That's a good joke, though.
It's a good joke.
Come on. Yeah.
So they tell me,
can't be mad about
things
that.
Things got easier after that. But before that, I worked 6 weeks for Brian Grazer and Ron Howard on a movie called Greedy. And I worked 2 weeks on a movie called Batman Forever. Joel Schumacher gave me that job. And that was the sum total of the 90s. I worked television. I could go to Canada and do a movie or New Zealand or Australia do a movie, but I was not in any studio movies in the 90s at all. Now, again, not a blacklist, but I freak people out.
Wow. And did it go the other way ever? Where that you're on the set and
I'm
they
sure
go,
it's
Ed,
gone
we're going to, you know
yeah,
what we did because you're here,
plus.
We're doing this, and this because you made a good impression.
Yeah, well, let me be clear. Christopher Guest bailed me out of movie jail. No question, with Best in Show, then A Mighty Wind, and all those movies. He literally like signed for my things and had an electric vehicle waiting at movie jail. I'm joking, of course. But he put me in that movie, and then somehow I was okay again. But it was a long, dry period there. But again, don't throw any benefits for me then or now. I was fine. I always, worked in television, and I also worked, somehow television was different. I don't know why. But I worked, I worked enough to get by for sure. And I had very low bills because I grew my food and I made my own electricity. So I was fine.
Well, going Mighty Wind, I believe you taught me Yiddish in A Mighty Wind, your character.
Does Sheb knock us like that? I'm telling you.
So what have you learned about, as your people would say, this fakakta business? How have you stayed in this fakakta business this long?
I love it so much. I wanted to be an actor like my dad. My dad was an actor in 12 Angry Men and other fine films like that. He won an Oscar for Sweet Bird of Youth. So I wanted to do what he did, but I had it entirely wrong. I literally thought, why doesn't he just get me a series? I want to be on Wagon Train. I want to be on Perry Mason. I want to be on Gunsmoke. Get me a regular part in a show. Like, he could, first of all, pick up the phone and do that. Of course, he couldn't. And also, I had no training. So I went on a number of interviews. I got those, of course, because I was Ed Begley's son. I went on the interviews and got none of the jobs. Why? I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I thought, I'm charming. Give me a job. Then I finally started training and then began to work. So I got very, very lucky to start at age 17 on a show called My Three Sons.
Amazing. So the whole idea of Nepo Baby is,
oh, it's
really
real. Trust me, I'm still benefiting.
By the way, when we were preparing for this, I remembered, like, as a teenager, when I got into movies, my dad said I had to see the film your dad won the Oscar for. I have never seen it until this week. I watched it to prepare for this, and he's pretty good.
He's damn good in that
movie. He's the second, my second favorite Begley.
You're very kind.
I've been a fan of yours all along, and I remember seeing you. I didn't remember My Three Sons, but I do remember, like, Going South, which, by the way, was Jack Nicholson someone who believed in you early, and what was that like?
Jack Nicholson literally gave me that job with no interview. He and I had been friends for a while, so I met him in 72. This is 77. We did the movie. I called him up. My lovely first wife, Ingrid, said, mother of my two grown kids, she said, call him up, and he's doing a movie. Jack's doing a movie. You're his friend. Call him. I said, I'm not going to do that. The reason I'm his friend, because I never ask him for anything like that. I'm not going to bother him. And say, she just wore me down. I finally called him up, knowing that would be the end of the friendship. And he went, Begs, let me look into it. And so then he called me back in a few days, and he says, I got a part for you. It's called Whitey. Do you think you can play a character named Whitey? And I play this kind of bank clerk in the movie Going South, and Paul Schrader did the same thing for me, put me in these movies, Blue Collar and Cat People, no interview, you know, no having to try out. So I was very, very lucky that people took a chance on me and began to work in those movies that you mentioned.
Blue Collar with Richard Pryor?
Richard Pryor, Yaphet Kotto, Harvey Keitel.
And did you get to meet or talk with Richard at all? I know you did stand-up, so he pretty much was the best ever.
Yeah, the best ever. And so I, you know, we had one night, we played poker together and we hung out together a little bit. You know, he was very focused on the part, but he was just great. I idolized him. He was a great, great comic, of course, a great American storyteller. And absolutely, a great actor in some great movies. He really proved, you know, with his characters like Mudbone and what have you, that's great acting to do the character of Mudbone on his albums and in concert. But he was a great actor and a great comic.
Do you have a favorite role or project that you've done?
Just by the length of it, I would say right away it would be St. Elsewhere. And it wasn't like poor quality and it was a long job. It was a long job of great quality.
Yeah.
And so I love that.
Can we ask one question about that? Because I've been watching it just literally this morning, and it's so great. And that cast, I wonder, do you ever stay in touch, get together? Like, we had a podcast episode with Paul Reiser, who told us about, like, getting together recently with the diner guys. Do you ever get together with any of the your fellow physicians?
There's been a few of those, like Landmark, 20 years after, 25 year after things, we get together and do a photo shoot, you know, with Entertainment Weekly or something like that. We've done that, but there hadn't been any other formal get together. But whenever I see any of them, everybody's pretty joyous to see the other because it was such a great experience.
How many years?
We did it 6 years from 82 through 88.
Great.
Bill Daniels, Bonnie Bartlett, Ed Flanders, Denzel Washington, David Morris, Christina Pickles, Jennifer Savage. These great, great actors.
What happened to that Denzel person you mentioned?
He's working, apparently.
Yeah.
And doing some incredible work. What an actor.
Unbelievable.
Rochelle and I went to his AFI tribute. He was one of the best AFI tributes I've ever been to because of the quality of the work and what he did for what he's done for the community with his time and his largesse. And amazing what he's done. Amazing man.
Absolutely. You mentioned Paul Schrader, Cat People. What was I think of the Bowie song, so I always think of that. What was that experience like?
It was great. It was, you know, Malcolm McDowell, and I'd never met Malcolm prior to that. I got to know him very well when I moved up to Ojai, but Malcolm was on that. It was my dear old friend Annette O'Toole was in it. John Hurd, I only met him on Cat People. That was great. Nastassja Kinski, I had seen Tess, and my God, I'm just blown away by her, the quality of her work. She was lovely, of course, and as was everybody. And Paul Schrader is a lovely man. It was a great experience. This was my second movie I did, as I said. Oh, no, my third. I did Somebody Became Unavailable. I had one day on Hardcore as well from Paul Schrader.
Oh.
I was in Hardcore. I was in Blue Collar, Cat People, and then I was also in Autofocus. So Paul's given me more work than many of my agents.
And when you sit down to watch a movie late at night or something, have you ever been surprised that you were in a movie? Is there, are there any that, that even you are like,
I'm
actually surprised
when he's not in a movie.
Yes,
he works so much.
That kind of thing happens a bit. Like people have been, several people told me this past week, your Dick Cavett was on. I made a recording of it. I said, I got to see that. I said, well, I'll get it to you. What do you mean you got to see it? I said, because I have no memory of doing Dick Cavett.
You do
too
much?
Like I was drunk at the time. I was definitely sober in that period.
You do too many things.
But I have no memory of doing the Dick Cavett show. Zero.
When you're on all these productions, talk about, and you've talked about living by example, do people come up to you and ask you how they can get more involved in your cause?
Yes, thankfully, they do. People often want to do something, and I give them some tips on things to do, a website of, you know,
great,
that'll help them get more active, you know, with groups of people. I try to make use of that wonderful contact when people want to do something.
That's great.
And being around Emma, you know, I guess you were here even before Debbie, right? Before she was took over this organization with you. What is it like to watch this new generation of people? Because even in the 10 years or 15 years I've been around the Emma Awards, there is a new generation constantly coming in and taking up the cause too with you.
That was a wise decision on Debbie Levin's part to involve the youth and really get them motivated to do things like, you know, this multi-day thing with Impact and lots of other events, you know, different organic garden plantings at schools and what have you. She's really engaged the youth here at Emma, and that's important. You know, people like me have done what they can over the years, but a lot of us, I certainly am slowing down, and we need young people to be engaged. They're the ones that are going to be left with this, so with great apologies, we want to assist them, but make sure that they know there's a lot of work to be done, and those who want to can help.
But you seem optimistic.
I am optimistic. Let me not be so put on such rose-colored glasses. There's a lot that's going to be lost, species that will be gone forever, and lots of big challenges. But I'm convinced we can save a lot of it still if we act now. We can't waste any more time, or the coral reefs will be entirely gone. You know, many species of amphibians and birds and different creatures will just be gone forever. This is the highest rate of extinction, you know, per thousand or whatever way you want to look at it, ever in the history of mankind, you know, other than, you know, when the meteors strike the Earth and, you know, the KT boundary, the 65 million years ago when that happened, it's just been a great loss of species, and it's not good for us. There's a web of life that supports us all, and we're losing it.
So this is your definition of optimism?
It's pessimistic optimism.
Yeah. You got to be realistic. A lot,
yes.
What's in the pipeline now, a lot will be lost, but there's much that we can save. Let's say half of it.
So what do you see out there? And I know you keep abreast of all this stuff. What is there a single thing other than the enthusiasm of young people? Is there something you can point to, or maybe a few things that you can point to that give you the most hope?
The thing about four times the people in LA since 1970, millions more cars, that gives me hope. The
yep.
fact that the ozone hole is not bigger, it's not the same size, it's smaller, that
right.
gives me hope. But to keep in mind what we did, we banned CFCs.
Right.
Oh, you'll never be able to buy a refrigerator again. You won't be able yeah. to buy an air conditioner, they said. I'm told those items are still for sale. And the ozone hole is smaller. We've done that. The Cuyahoga River near Cleveland caught fire in 1969. That's why a lot of people like me got involved in 1970. We had rivers catching fire.
Right.
Seemed like a bad sign, rivers
right.
catching
Not
fire.
Not good, generally.
Not good. So that doesn't happen anymore. The Hudson River greatly cleaned up. There's
yeah.
a lot that we've done, and we got to stay the course and do more of it. Celebrate our victories, but remember our defeats and make sure it doesn't happen again.
Is there a technology you can point to that's coming? Just like I'm asking you about the solar panels. Is there some piece of technology that you think is fantastic that we should look out for?
There's probably a lot, and I can't think of any new tech now that's other than the way that energy efficiency is developing, that is to say smart homes and stuff like that and the smart grid
right.
that's out there now, but that's developing a pace that's really going more quickly and being used much in a much more efficient manner. That's very exciting. But there's so much to choose from. People have been overwhelmed with the scope of the problems. I think people are now overwhelmed with the scope of the solutions. They're like, they want to climb to the top of Mount Everest, but they're stuck at base camp not knowing what gear to get. Just put something on, climb as high as you can. You may not make it to the top. Not everybody's going to have solar panels on the roof and a Tesla, but you do what you can. Get an energy-saving thermostat. Buy some energy-efficient light bulbs. Start recycling. Start composting. Become a vegetarian. You know, public transportation, if it's available near you. Ride a bike if weather and fitness permit. All that stuff I just mentioned, super cheap. Everybody do what they can. Really do what you can. Like, I can't because fill in the blank. Do something. I think we can really turn this around.
You make me realize, you mentioned the Hudson River. When Phil and I have talked about when we were growing up on the East Coast, there was the Pete Seeger, and actually
the Hudson River Keeper, yes.
Right, and you would go on the Clearwater Sloop, and it would educate every school kid. And our kids went to a school, Oakwood, not far from here, where you, I think all of our kids were personally, you would visit, you would educate them. And the impact of what one person can do, what Pete Seeger did in his lifetime, what you've done in your lifetime, it's remarkable when you think about that. And still last week, my same kids who are now grown-ups were looking at you on their phones, taking public transportation to the Oscars. Wow. That went viral. And that didn't, think about the positive effect, like of all the horrible things our kids are watching on our phone, on phones we paid for in some cases. And that's a great thing for them to see you with your daughter doing, you know, doing something.
My daughter Hayden, that was all her idea. Is she here?
Hi, Hayden. Hi.
Where's Hayden?
Hi.
Hayden Begley's right here. Thank you for that great idea, honey.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm very hopeful when I think of the youth and see youth like that.
Yeah, they're smarter than we are.
Much smarter, believe me.
Should we go to some questions from the audience?
I'm sure
now?
They have them.
We would love to hear
Hayden,
your
would
questions.
Would you like to ask your dad something?
Do you think that we can continue at the same rate of activism, or do you think that we need to up the ante now?
We definitely got to pump up the volume. We've got to pick up the pace here. We're, you know, if we go at this rate, that optimistic notion of saving half of, you know, what is out there now will not occur. It'll be catastrophic. Paul Watson was talking last night. Was it last night that he was?
Tuesday
night. Sorry, Paul Watson was talking. He made a great point. If we lose the phytoplankton, which is happening, we're losing so much phytoplankton because of the warming and many other assaults on phytoplankton in the sea. If we lose that, forget about the Amazon rainforest. It's not enough with the trees. Did you know that? The trees don't make nearly enough oxygen for us to survive. They just don't. They never have. Phytoplankton make tremendous amounts of oxygen. If they go away, phytoplankton can live without us. We can't live without them. So we got to pick up the pace. We're going to lose things like that. Again, trees are very important to me. I don't mean to diminish them. We got to save all the trees we can. We got to do everything and every bit of behavior that we can in our lives. And again, most important thing I'm going to say in this podcast for me, it's not just activism that's going to do this. The three pillars on one any achievement are based on. Activism, that's part of it. Corporate responsibility, people making energy-efficient light bulbs that I can buy, and good legislation. We clean up the air in L.A., not just for me riding the bike and taking the bus. We clean it up with the Clean Air Act, signed by an environmental nutcase by the name of Richard Nixon. Keep that in mind. He signed the Clean Air Act. That's how we cleaned up the air in L.A. We went to the Air Resources Board. We're going to sue you, said we and the Coalition for Clean Air, if you don't clean up the air, because here's the law, signed by a Republican, by the way, and we got it cleaned up.
Well, yeah, that's good to know.
Credit where it's due. This has to be a nonpartisan, a bipartisan effort. Has to be. Otherwise, it won't happen.
Yeah, they do get together when it comes to curing diseases. So this counts as a disease, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Right?
Yeah.
More questions, please. Oh, right there in front.
Hi, Julia Posen. Can you talk about the role of cultural influencers, artists, and cultural leaders in essentially lobbying for this kind of change that you're talking about? Lobbying, you know, legislators to make smart environmental policy.
Yeah, I think we I think a good resource for that is if you have a thermometer that works or a BP cuff, you know, blood pressure testing device that works, you can tell the health of the patient. There's a group called the League of Conservation Voters, and they give have a report card every year to tell you how people have voted on the environment. Republican and Democrat, everybody in the Senate, the House, the state legislature, all of that, they tell you how they do. And if that's an important issue to you, then you can vote accordingly. So that's knowing that information, you can really get involved in different races, and you can get the people elected that you want to be elected for that, or many others, women's issues, you know, woman's right to choose, gun control, all sorts of stuff like that. So that's a good resource in the environment is the League of Conservation Voters. They have a yearly report card you can get online, won't cost you anything to look at, and you can know who's doing well and who's not doing well in the environment with their score, like a 13 out of 100, or a 99 or a 98 or sometimes 100 from some really good people like Barbara Boxer would often get 100 or a 99. So stuff like that.
Who's the worst?
Let me think about that. In California or nationwide?
I think you got a lot of choices. I was just half
kidding. There's a lot.
It's okay. But, I mean,
Young and Murkowski in Alaska were pretty bad for quite a while.
Well, look what's happening.
Not Lisa Murkowski. She's been very good on the environment.
Yeah.
Her husband, father, I don't remember.
I think it's her father, I think.
Her father.
More questions, please. Right in front here, please.
Hi, I'm Davina, and I was wondering if you could talk about the role that recreation and stewardship can have in furthering this movement, because I think we tend to focus on the fear of everything bad that can happen, but I know that my relationship to nature, my love for nature, has furthered my involvement in this work. And so how can our love for nature and our love for each other further this work?
That might be the best question of the day. For me, it is. We got to save the Cuyahoga River. We got to ban the plastics. We got to do the thing. Let's go down to the beach, the Santa Barbara oil spill. Come on, let's go right now. Rush, rush, rush. We got to do it. Calm down. Take a second. Get yourself centered. Maintain your ecosystem. Don't do anything. Don't just do something. Stand there. Not forever. But you got to be centered. You have to be still before you can take action. And many people in the environmental movement and other wonderful movements forget that, and they burn up all their energy and they can't get anything done.
You mean by getting angry?
By getting angry, absolutely, yes. And not taking care of themselves as well by making sure that they maintain their own ecosystem in a healthy manner. I've seen a lot of people burn out, so. Anger doesn't help. You're not going to win anybody over to climate change or anything by yelling at them. And what's that, honey? What'd she say?
That was your wife saying, I know.
She'd give her equal time.
Yes.
Your daughter asking the great, eloquent question made me wonder, have you ever had a kid? How do you rebel against Ed Begley Jr. as a parent? Do any kids like kick bicycles ever? How does a child of Ed Begley Jr. Act out?
She drives a diesel truck.
Coal. She has a coal-powered vehicle that she brought here. No. They're all better than me in every way, environmentally in every way. I thought for sure at least one of them was going to rebel and do the Michael J. Fox and Family Ties thing, be the young Republican, but it didn't happen.
Against you.
They're
all,
it's a Stockholm syndrome. They have identified with their captor. I'm sorry. Let me formally apologize in front of everybody. Another form of child abuse.
You mentioned Chris Guest in those movies. Are those the experience of making those? What has that meant to you personally? Like, and what's it like to be able to showcase your? Because
will he do more? Are there more coming? Is he retired?
I'm told. I can't go into great detail, but I'm told that there's going to be a Spinal Tap project coming out.
Yeah.
That's what I'm told.
That's awesome.
And by the way, you are my favorite drummer. I think we both know Ringo Starr, and you're still my favorite drummer.
Thank you so much.
In Spinal Tap.
Yeah, I die in a bizarre gardening accident, I think.
Which is appropriate, as it turned out.
So you might see Stumpy John Peeps again, too, is all I'm going to say.
Wow.
I'm kind of hoping. I know he's deceased, but you know who knows what the past holds for us.
Who else wants to ask questions? Back there. Oh, right here.
Oh,
sorry,
before we get to that question, hold the question for a second.
Hold
it. I didn't really talk about how great it is being on the set with Chris and them. They
do
all the hard work. That is to say, Rob Reiner and Chris and Michael McKean and Harry Shearer and Spinal Tap. And then it became Eugene Levy and Chris, you know, with Best in Show and A Mighty Wind. Then now it's Jim Pittock. They do all the hard work. They write the 25-page treatment of what, you know, Best in Show, A Mighty Wind is. And then we go and just play. You got, you know, Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara across the desk for you in Best in Show. All I got to do is not laugh my ass off. All I got to do is keep a straight face. That's my one and only job. So that's what it is. It's a party for us. And Chris and Jim Pittock do all the work at this point.
Nice.
Sorry.
Well, I'm happy to hear more is coming.
I'm praying.
Hi, Ed, Jay. Since we're all laughing here, and I think we need it after some of the conversations we've had today.
How bad were they?
They're really good, but they're very moving. And I feel like when people think of activists and how they're portrayed, even in media, it's always so serious. And it is, because these are serious issues. But what role does comedy play? Why can't we laugh sometimes even about like ourselves and be self-deprecating? And how does that get more people involved in the movement to have a sense of humor about these things?
We have to. What a good point. I think that's very important. You can't take yourself seriously. I think that was David Brower's Rule 9 or something. He had some different wonderful bits of wisdom, the great David Brower. And so I think that's important. It ties into what I said before, taking some time. I got to save this. I got to save all the owls. I got to save all the snow leopards. And we do have to do that. I'm not saying we don't. We can't just sit around and spin a prayer wheel and hope it happens. We got work to do. But you got to be centered. You got to have some joy and some laughter in your life. You got to have to make the environmental catastrophe funny, which I think they did, and serious in that movie, Don't Look Up. Oh, I thought that was a great movie. Anybody else like that movie? So I think that's very, very important. Thank you for mentioning that. I think it's essential. It's essential to my work in the environment. Being mocked on The Simpsons was a turning point and a good one for me.
We'll mock you later. Don't worry. Over there, there's a question in the back, I believe.
Hi, Ed, Alon. I think what you and Hayden did was awesome for the Oscars. I'm an LA guy and I live in New York right now, and I've been studying transportation and equity intimately, especially focusing on Los Angeles. I wanted to hear your thoughts with that experience, considering most of us here probably have our own cars. How feasible do you think it is right now to live a life in LA, moving around solely with public transportation, considering the expansion that's going on also before the
It's very difficult for most people. Not everybody has a good fortune to live where I live, near a transit hub, and to just get a lot of my stuff is up and down Ventura Boulevard, so it's very easy. And, you know, for some people, and some people, it's very easy to go up and down Vermont or Western Avenue, you know, for some people too. But other people, to get a complicated trip to go from, you know, West Hills or, you know, Canoga Park to get downtown to work is a schlep, you know, and a long one. It's not fun in the 101 in a car, I know that, but to get to the bus that runs down, you know, basically east-west in the valley, the Orange Line, it's a big rigmarole. So we need to make it better. We need to make it safer. You know, there's a lot of times where I, you know, as an elderly person, thought, is this going to work out okay? There's some pretty sketchy stuff going on in this car. And I, at the next stop, I moved to another car. But, you know, late at night, as a woman, I know my daughter Hayden had some concerns during this past week of taking transit everywhere. You took transit exclusively for a week, and that was amazing, honey. But I'm sure there were times where there was safety was a concern for you, was it not?
Yes, I think, you know, I'm somebody who has always liked to go out on my own.
I'm sorry.
Hello. I'm somebody who always, I like to go on long walks by myself, especially at night, which is very much a danger, and everyone tells me to stop doing that. But for me, you know, I was lucky enough, my sister, she also takes public transit. She lives alone. As a woman, and she informed me that there's actually a Metro incident report app that you can download alongside the transit app that allows you to be directly connected to Metro security. So that was very, very helpful. And knowing that, you know, there was a couple times where I had to walk under a very large bridge to get from one stop to the next, and I would call my dad to be like, hey, just be on the phone with me, you know, for a little bit. But that being said, there's been many times I've been in my car going downtown and I felt the same way. I think,
if we can have safety in numbers, right, with enough people just trying to get from here to there on the metro, the same way you're in New York and you're taking a subway at 2 a.m., there's a lot of other people that are leaving a bar somewhere, we can achieve a certain feeling of safety no matter who you are or what your ability level is, and I think that that will be essential to having us grow further.
Yeah, they need more of those transit ambassadors, they're calling them now, people that have quick access to security, people on like a walkie-talkie or something, but they're there to just, you know, come on, let's de-escalate here where people are getting a little wild in the car, what have you, other things happening on platforms. They need to fix that. With the pandemic, people stopped taking the subway. Normal people going to jobs just didn't need the subway for a while or the buses or anything. So then other people, unhoused people now found a place. Well, this is a good place to just hang out for the day and the night. The subway station, you know, on the track, not the tracks, the platform there. Yeah. So we need to make sure it's safe for everybody. Make sure there's plenty of buses that are running on time. And we got to make a better transit system than we have right now.
What else about the pandemic? What lessons can we learn from the pandemic environmentally? Because I know my neighborhood, which is sort of not far from you, but up on sort of Mulholland, that area, within a few weeks of people not driving as much, there were deer and coyote everywhere. Like it was like nature was reclaiming Mulholland Drive.
Almost. And the air instantly. Was so beautiful and clear. It was unbelievable. It was, yeah, there's nature can heal and fairly quickly in many cases. So we got to get on a healing trend and stop doing so much damage.
Absolutely.
We have another question here.
Yes, please.
Hi. One, thank you for holding space. Thank you for sharing space with a lot of us. So two things were brought up. One, that whales and birds and bunnies need our help. And then safety. Earlier, you mentioned that heavy industry cities like Long Beach, Lynwood, Southgate, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a disproportionate negative impact on Black and Brown communities. And since you brought it up here on this platform, I wonder if you'd be interested in working with grassroots organizations sometime in the near future or not too distant future to take the work or take the dialogue at least from this very gorgeous stage to the very gorgeous communities that need us hand in hand.
Absolutely. That's essential. And whatever I can do, I commit to doing it right now. Yes. Good on you. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, the plating facilities that are using hexavalent chromium and what have you, they're doing chrome plating and other kinds of plating in all those places. They're never where I live in Studio City. You know, they're in other parts of the Southland, the parts of L.A., and we need to make sure that those communities are protected and they don't wind up with another, like the Exide battery recycling plant, you know, lots of lead in the environment, and it's very, very unhealthy for young people, for everybody. We got to stop that.
We're all interconnected and interdependent.
Yes, we are.
Anyone else, people?
We're blinded slightly here.
Let me just say what a joy it is to be with all of you, and especially with my dear friend, Ed. Mm. Thanks for coming down today, Ed. You can ride. What are you going to ride back now?
I took the big electric car to the Oscars. I took the subway. Today, I took the little electric car, my personal one.
Nice, nice. Is there anything in car technology that you see coming down the road?
Literally.
Yeah.
There's just, what I like is there's just more and more manufacturers making more and more,
yes,
each of them more and more
this
cars,
year,
so there's
more
choices.
Ever. This year, more than ever.
More than ever, so yep. People have lots of choices.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody is not ready to live with a pure electric. They can get a plug-in, you know, hybrid vehicle and do 93% of their driving on electricity.
But California's leading the charge for that, right?
Yes, definitely. We've got so many chargers. Incredible charging infrastructure. When I was shooting Better Call Saul, every time I drove there in my electric car, I never had to fly and burn kerosene up at 31,000 feet. I got to go in in my car there and back very easy, you know, because of the charging infrastructure that exists today.
Yep.
And I think of it with, I think the first time I got involved before Emma with an environmental show was working with Al Gore on a bunch of events. And I remember I had just bought my first Prius because someone in Hollywood, maybe it was because of Larry David, I saw him in a Prius and I bought my first Prius. And I felt so good when I went to my first meetings with Al Gore and I had a Prius. But think how far we've come, how much, you know, it's that that was not that long ago in American car history. And think of the progress.
That's the power of that, of Larry doing that and other people doing that, showing that that stuff works. You know, we don't have time to go door to door with this message of what's happening environmentally and how we can change it. We need to use the media, and that's what the Environmental Media Association does very well. Media and the environment acting as a nexus between those two important, you know, parts of our life, and getting good, responsible messages out there with good science behind it.
So let's hear it for Emma and then for Ed.
Thank you, Ed Begley Jr.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Love you, too.
Thank you.
I'm just going to make a drop one thing. And because we've been here for 2 days, I just want to say to everybody, first of all, Ed is all of our mentors. Ed to us is the most gracious way to really be an activist, and be an activist by taking personal responsibility and not judgmental, but 100% in, and showing, as you did with the entertainment community and moving past that on a cultural level. This is the example of what we all want to be. So just please, everybody, please acknowledge what an amazing human being and my love of my
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Naked Lunch is a podcast by Phil Rosenthal and David Wild. Theme song and music by Brad Paisley. Produced by Will Sterling. Executive produced by Phil Rosenthal, David Wild, and Josephine Martirana. Engineering support by Brendan Burns. And our consulting journalist is Pamela Challen. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a friend. But if you can't take my word for it, take Phil's.
And don't forget to leave a good rating and review. We like 5 stars, you know.
Thanks for listening to Naked Lunch, a Lucky Bastards and Stitcher production.